Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, welcome to an edition of Speaking of Reliability. This is Adam Barrett.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. And thanks for tuning in and listening to us. Adam, I think when this episode airs, we're going to be at or near 700,000 downloads on the reliability.fm podcast network.
Did you ever picture we would get to that?
I was hoping we get past 10 episodes. I think this is going to be episode 350 or something like that, 355.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when we first talked about this is, well, what are we going to talk about? Every week we're going to do this? What are we going to talk about? It's not been a problem. So thanks for all your help and support putting these shows together and all that good stuff. And hopefully you as the listener have enjoyed it. And if you haven't listened to all 350 plus episodes, that's okay. You still have time. They're still out there. But, you know, today, Adam, I wanted to share a quick story with you. Early in my consulting career, and to see what your response would be to this. So I was working at Hewlett Packard, and I was essentially an internal or a captured consultant, and I was flying off to a division to work with them on some reliability topics they wanted us to help them with. And I got there, I saw my host, another engineer, and he goes, you got to be careful. Agnes is just gunning for you. I'm like, who's Agnes? And she's one of our senior statisticians. She thinks all consultants are like fleas. You just can't get rid of them once they show up. They just make you itch. And I'm getting this picture of this person was just not liking the idea that they decided to bring in a consultant, even though I was also an HP employee at the time. And so I said, well, I gotta deal with this. So I swung by our desk and said, hi, I'm Fred. I understand you think I'm a flea.
There you go. Head on.
It says, what's the problem? And we, long story short, we ended up being best friends and allies and lots of projects and had a good time. But yeah, she was like, no, you guys are just troublemakers. You come in to just make sure you can stay in. And I'm like,
Right. And this, and you know, we were talking a bit about this, you know, of course, that's how our episodes always start. You and I are just chatting, catching up, and we realized we should, you know, have this.
Hit record. I've learned to hit record much quicker with you.
Just hit record. Just before we dial, just hit record. And the whole thing is that, you know, that whole thing of the value of finding your nemesis and also recognizing the value of them, because when you really get down to it, in a lot of ways, they are the same as you. And the sense that if somebody's a nemesis, that means they probably have passion for what they're doing. They care about something, mm-hmm. right? Because the opposite of, you know, they say love and hate is almost the same thing. It's indifference that's the opposite. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. It's true. So, you know, partnering with people that are indifferent and nice and when, you know, you're not going to get, you know, they're not going to be an energy that gets you anywhere.
Well, the simple thing is you get no feedback. I wanted to go meet Agnes to find out what was the hurdle or barrier that I was going to need to overcome to be a successful consultant, one.
Exactly.
But also just for the professional feedback, you know?
Yeah. So the funny thing is, I think I'm, again, it's that reliability engineer mindset where everybody else wants to test and they don't want to fail, but when it fails, they're upset and I'm super excited because I'm like, we found the failure. This is amazing. We learned something. Right. So a lot of times when I'm with new teams and stuff, I kind of, you know, I'm scanning the room, learning everybody. And I always am looking to pick my target, that person who is already kind of going to be the counterforce to reliability. And what I mean by the counterforce is, in all honesty, if you let a reliability engineer be the head of a product development program, it would be a disaster because you'd have this product that should have released in 6 months, released 15 years later when all the testing programs were done and you'd learned everything you possibly could learn.
Nah, our listeners are better reliability people than that. I think they could manage programs just fine. Yeah, come on. Give us a break. I get it, though.
Okay.
Will you know your nemesis? I imagine a tell for your key nemesis, and you go, oh, and then, well, we're not going to give you any samples for testing because you're just going to break them.
Well, you know? Yeah. Well, actually, do you know who it is? It's the guy who can't stop talking about schedule. That's the thing that gets me to focus in on them, because that is the opposite. And that's
why
I'm
saying, we don't
have
time for an FMEA. We don't have time for a halt test. We don't have time to look at your field data. We don't have time for,
Right. The metric for this opposing forces is schedule. That's why I was saying, for reliability, if you left it to us, we're going to drag the program on a very long time and put at risk time to market to some degree. And if you let this other type of person have control, you're going to get it out there right quick, but it's, you know, going to have a ton of issues. So, and the correct is somewhere in the middle, the balance, right? It's the, you know, I'm a Star Wars guy, right? So I'm like, it's the balance and the force, you know, you need both, you know, to get to the right spot. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of value in picking out these people and doing actually exactly what you did and approaching them directly. And together acknowledging that there's a balance, because they also know that if they were left unattended, they would ruin the product, right? I'm open enough to know if I was left unattended, I would ruin the product, right? And if they care that much to be vocal, once you get to them and you sink and you both realize we're really trying to get to the same thing, a successful product, right? And together we are, since I can only steer left and you only steer right, if we both put our hands on the wheel, we're probably going to get to where we're going. So it's I think it's an interesting thing to kind of frame to put your mind.
Does that analogy work when you have these kind of discussions with your nemesis? You know, you steer left and I steer right. And does that ever get you anywhere? That sounds like one of those trite pickup line type things.
I'm trying to pick them up basically in a program management way. Yeah. I just made that up on the spot talking to you. I'm free flowing here.
Come on, Adam.
What would you really do?
No, you find a guy that's somebody is just, you know, and I had that happen. I had a program manager say, I asked her to prioritize cost, schedule, functionality, and quality, reliability. And she said, oh, it's schedule, schedule, and third is schedule. What else is
that? That's your girl. That's right. The one you continue a conversation with. And actually, you're making fun of me for saying something cheesy like that. I actually once did say, do the Star Wars thing, taking a total gamble if they were Star, because if they're a Star Wars person, you just won their heart. If they're not, then they're like, you're an idiot.
Well, you're a nerd. You're just a nerd. They already knew that.
Yeah. I'm looking for their nerds, right? And thank God they were, and they laughed, and they totally got what I was saying. You know, they totally understood. But when I say that left hand, right hand thing, being the, of course, you know, we do know how to modulate ourselves. But in effect, if you look at the role that we play, it should be just a one directional force as long as you have the opposing forces, right?
Well,
to some degree.
See, I go to the analogy of setting good key performance indicators, and the theory and books around that stuff is that, you know, if you set a metric that's only focused on cost for a program development, you will minimize cost at the expense of other things that may be important to especially your customers, like it works, you know. Kind of. So if you balance that with what's the warranty cost, for example, then it doesn't matter how cheap you make the product, it's got to be designed well enough at an appropriate cost so that you minimize the field failure rate, for example.
So wait, are you saying that, so kind of if we were to take what we're saying and try to visualize it, to one degree, what I'm saying is those different goals you described, I'm saying are individual people at the table, right? So you basically could line up those goals, time to market, cost, all that. And I'm saying, okay, time to market's Paul, warranty cost is Bill, you know, and then they work together to create the balance. But it sounds like you're disagreeing with that and saying, no, each one of those people should be considering all of those things.
I know in theory they should be, but it's
it's a trick question.
No, one of the things
it
I've
be
run
an
in,
argument. You wouldn't have a nemesis. Right?
No. One of the things I've run into is that people tend to focus on things that are they get paid for or is personally important to them. And they tend to minimize other things unless
that's okay as long as they're willing to work with the other forces.
What I found, and it's a little different than what I've heard you talk about in your theory before, the way you're going, is that there's a threshold. for these other parts. If the cost gets, if we're only focused on schedule and we're going to put a bunch of cost in it, we're just going to get the best parts. We don't have to worry about it and we don't jeopardize the schedule. I've heard that argument before. Unless the cost goes over this trigger point, then the product's not profitable at all, right? So I can increase costs to get schedule only to a certain point. And then there's a trigger that says it doesn't make sense anymore. And they understand that if I just ship the product and none of them work for customers, we're not successful. It's not a product. So there's a minimum reliability that they're willing to go to, right? And it's different by product line and by industry. But if you can go to them and say, hey, look, you're going to have 75% of your products fail in the first month if you do this. Oh, well, we can't have that happen. Or some test fails and some functionality is not happening. Oh, well, we got to fix that, even though it's going to impact their schedule. I found it more as that the team or an individuals will have a single priority focus type thing. And the better teams will be consistent across the team of what they're focusing on at various points in time in the program development. Yet with being mindful of these thresholds and triggers that they can't cross, that don't necessarily balance everything else out, but bound those other parameters, those other priorities. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. But our focus is on the nemesis in this conversation.
That's right. Right.
And they always exist.
And they exist. And there's people in every program that are going to focus on different things. I remember it was another HP experience. And I was a design for manufacturing engineer. And I was assigned to work with Ed. And he was, probably still is, an electrical engineer. He's fairly senior. He really knew what he was doing. And I'm just this new young guy getting assigned to him to do design for X type stuff. In the way he phrased it, I was going to do that to him.
Right.
And I'd swing by and we were in cubicles at Hewlett Packard, and I'd swing by and darken his doorway, his opening to the cubicle, and he'd just sigh. And right. I was like, you're treating this like it's a drive-by shooting. And he goes, it is. I don't go to meetings with you.
So here's the thing though. So that's kind of my point, is that it's easy to then dig in or choose to dismiss him. Were you able to?
Oh, I asked him finally.
Get him to engage.
Yeah. What's the most important thing to you? And he was I was on him because we had a prototype run coming up, and I was managing getting the protos built and running them through our line and getting them back to him. And he goes, you know what would really be helpful if you could do this. And immediately I hit save on my CAD program here, my design program, and you walk in with the finished product. Then I can continue to work very efficiently. And the current process took us about 2 to 3 weeks to get protos turned around. And so I said, all right, I'm going to spend a day working through why does it take us that long? And it turns out it was a procurement guy that didn't want to spend any extra money. So he waited till the absolute final bomb was released before he bought anything. And some of the key parts would take 2 weeks to show up. And I was like, you don't need to do that. We could get circuit boards built overnight. We could, and that we would pay for them to do it. But because some other components would take longer, we didn't do it. And it turns out that those swing components that Ed was trying to make a last minute decision on and doing lots of analysis to get it right and holding off, it was always down to like 2 parts, maybe 3 parts.
Right.
And so for $50, we could take it from a 3 week turnaround time to 3 days. And Ed's eyes just lit up. And you can do that? I says, well, we're going to try.
Right.
You know? And, right. And he just became the best friend. And I'd say, you know, we really need to do this, this, and this on the design. And he goes, yep, yeah. And it was almost like he owed me to make it work.
He did. He did.
But there was part of that. But I think it also was, well, this guy is really trying to make this work. you know, and I think there was pieces of that.
Right. And he was the guy to focus on to make that happen. If you'd put that much effort into somebody else that was kind of more like, oh, hey, Fred, how's it going? It may have been harder to find where to have a success for them because they don't have any big complaints.
Right.
Right. And then secondly, if you did, they might be like, oh, okay, that's great. Thanks so much. Where is this other guy's, his how upset he is how happy he'll be when the thing that's making him upset will work. And that's kind of the thing. Like, that's why I look for that person who technically should be my nemesis. I'm like, that's the guy who is going to be that equally amount happy when I can solve what's bugging him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or help, at least.
Well, and I think it has benefits beyond finding a champion. I think it also makes for, like your analogy of the left-hand, right-hand steering, it makes for a stronger dialogue and discussion and decision-making all the way along. And yeah, sometimes it takes us out of the reliability role, right? Where I need to do things that actually facilitate solving a problem for an engineer that is tangential to the reliability piece. But what it does is it builds trust. It builds that you're contributing, you're part of the team. All of us reliability folks have skills and interests and knowledge and backgrounds that can actually be very, very valuable to a program. So use them. Use them to your advantage to build trust, to build credibility, to contribute. And so that when you do come in with the big ask or you say, hey, you know, this needs fixing here, you've got some solid foundation to work on. I think that's why I think you're going after this, the nemesis. But yeah, it's an interesting way to identify who you should talk to. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It's just, it's strong energy to be redirected, right? You know, so it's, you know, that's what you want.
Yeah. No, it's, so how many different ways, I mean, you mentioned schedule, so you've run into that a few times, right? And I have run into cost pretty regularly as people have focused on cost. I remember one person, the organization had a Holt Chambers in house, and so they at one point somewhere along the line mandated that teams do Holt testing, which was really a bad idea. And so I'm talking to this one engineer, and he goes, "Yeah, they do Holt. They break two products every month, every prototype cycle, they break them." And says, "Well, what do you do with that information?" He goes, "Well, I use it as a doorstop." He had the printouts all stacked up. It was about 3 feet high, holding his door open.
Wow.
You know.
He did it. He did what they said.
Yeah. You know, I was required to do it. We build it in the budget. We go over there. And so I could have just launched into a class on Holt, right? But no. I says, well, what's the pushback on it? Because it learned that they didn't really need a Holt test. There's nothing in those reports that they didn't already know from field data. And this was an iterative product. And each product generation was essentially solving the problems that they had coming back from the field prior. And they rarely, if ever, introduced something new. And so the Holt test just showed them what was already at the top of the Pareto on the last one, you know.
Yeah.
And they'd already budgeted to fix these two, which they did. That didn't show up in Holt, and the next two showed up in Holt, but they already knew those were the next two, you know, kind of thing. And he goes, it's really adding no value to us whatsoever. I get the concept and all that other stuff, but it's not helping.
Yep.
And I could really use those two prototypes to do other things, you know, and I really, so we worked to lift that policy. Or at first we just did it as an exception. And then he became such an advocate of it and showed how much more useful it was that you select the tools that you need to do your job rather than just mandate a fixed suite of activities, that we were able to make a lot of progress across a lot of parts of the organization.
Yeah, I always find it to be brutal when I see that there are mandated tool uses at certain times. You know, there's a predefined reliability program plan or program plan, and
It's
horrible because it not only wastes time and resource, it destroys any credibility these tools have, you know. And I always say it's the equivalent of if you were, of course, me in cars,
yeah,
but if you told a mechanic he had to use, you know, the 15 millimeter wrench at, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, tell him what he has to do, remove this or whatever. And if he needs a 14 millimeter wrench to get the job done, he'll grab it.
Right.
Like, don't tell him when he has to use it. That makes no sense. That's it's the right. same thing to just force something like hall testing on people when they aren't looking for design input based on failure modes makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah, it's, there's lots of ways to go about it, but I think you're right. I wouldn't have called it my nemesis. It's not like I have yet to run into anybody that says, no, we're not going to make a reliable product. We want to send out absolute crap because we're looking to be at the bottom of the market. I don't get that, right?
Nobody says that.
No. But they'll say,
But they will put it low enough on the priority list that you're kind of like, all right, we're starting to get close to that.
That's right.
Look for that person.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, but it's true. And it's also I find it personally rewarding is that you in each of those circumstances, and it sounds like you've had similar outcomes, is that they become advocates and good friends, too. And I think it's what you hit on, Adam, at the start, is that it's somebody that is equally passionate about what they're doing, that they really want this to work. They have a different path to it. But working together, you can really make it happen. So,
yeah,
good. All right. I don't know. We should ask our listeners. So, as we described this and talked in this episode, have you pictured your nemesis? You know who you're going to go talk to, or you know who they are already. But that's it. Might be worth just setting that out as a challenge and saying, you know, identify your nemesis and find out what they need to get done and how can you help them and build that relationship because I think it's going to be rewarding. But we'd love to hear your stories. And if maybe there's a whole nother episode here, Adam, on meeting your nemesis and it all going bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Meeting the evil nemesis, you know, somebody that's, right. you know, just going to slash your career because they think it's good for them.
Right, right.
There's an article about that in Wall Street Journal the other day. Is, you know, there are people in organizations that they kind of gang up on the top performers to make them look bad because when they succeed and do really well, it makes everybody else look bad.
Well, I can tell you the solution to that as well. The solution to that is just leave that organization. That's a very, very bad, you know, organizational culture. If that's being, you know, permitted to continue, there's times when you should just leave.
Yeah.
That would be it.
It's a short episode. We're done.
If you have gangs roaming around, like people start wearing jackets and there's certain colors for certain groups, I'm like, all right, I'm out of here.
Yeah. That's probably a bad sign. Yeah. Unless it's a theater and it's guys and dolls or something you're performing.
Yeah. Well, then you work in a weird place. But
yeah, that's it. All right. Well, we'd love to hear your stories. If you got a nemesis and that's turned out or didn't, we'd love to hear how it goes either way. Or if you've got ideas for other episodes and stuff, we'd love to hear from you. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. It's a page devoted to just hear from you. And we certainly would love to do that. So with that, Adam, I think we'll wrap this one up.
Yep. It's a good talk.
Good. Thanks, Adam. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.